Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks so much for being with us, as always. As you're listening, remember, we can still take your questions for the mayor. You can get those in by emailing ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. Mayor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Emily, thanks for having me.
Are you keeping cool out there?
So far, so good, but I've been inside since early this morning, so I haven't been back out yet.
All right, well, look out when you get out there. It's pretty hot.
Okay.
It's pretty hot
all
out
right
there. So I wanted to ask, let's start the show off. This week, Lafayette City Council passed a resolution opting Lafayette out of the state's potential opioid lawsuit settlements. That's because of a statute that got added into the state budget. And West Lafayette did the same. They opted out. Indianapolis, Marion County did. So first, wanted to go back a little bit. If you can give us just some background on Lafayette's opioid lawsuits, you know, where are we starting from?
Well, you know, we filed those originally about 2 years ago, kind of during the height of the opioid crisis. And as you indicated, along with several other municipalities and counties throughout the state of Indiana, and quite frankly, all over the country. Because we all know that first and foremost, the most important part, the personal devastation that the opioid crisis caused for many people that lost family members, loved ones, and friends during, you know, that very, very difficult period that built up over, a decade of marketing those products and the use of those products. But there also was, you know, cost to local communities in regards to law enforcement, emergency services, addiction services, housing, all kinds of things that really impacted local units of government and other entities within local government that supply services to folks. And so, you know, we got involved with that lawsuit because we really did feel it was the right thing to do for people that were responsible for some of that crisis, to be responsible for some of the, you know, things that needed to be done to fix it and improve the lives of people and to help people move forward. So we got on board with that, and you know, those cases have slowly been working through court systems throughout the country. It's a very, very slow process on something of that magnitude, and that kind of brought us up to this current situation where, towards the end of the legislative session, this agreement or this settlement process was kind of thrown into the budget at the last minute there. I was not even aware, as I think most mayors and people were not even aware.
I was going to ask if you were surprised about that. Okay.
Yes, certainly we were not consulted, or at least I was not. I'm guessing from the conversations I've had, most people were not, but that was kind of thrown in there. And so if you look at the percentages of how the money is divided up between what the state will be able to keep and what will be distributed by FSSA, we're just not sure that that's the right fit for us. As you indicated, I think most communities are not sure that that's the right fit. There's only about 15% that actually gets distributed between all the municipalities and counties, local units of government that were involved, and that's a pretty small piece of that pie, and we're not sure that that's the best angle for us to get as, you know, as many funds as possible to do as much good as possible to help people move forward. And there's still a lot of issues in the community with mental health and drug addiction and things like that that's, you know, related to the opioid crisis. So by opting out, that gives us an opportunity to, you know, evaluate that. We still can opt back in within the next 60 days if we choose to do so. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, and I'm also hoping that maybe there is some push with a coalition or group of other Indiana communities with some of the legislators to maybe they change and amend, you know, those percentages. You know, I think probably if local units of government was getting a higher percentage, which I feel would be more fair and more in line, and, you know, we're on the front lines here. You know, we're the government closest to the people and closest to the people that are suffering and working through this and providing services, if that number was appropriate. I would think that many of the communities would opt back in and we could move forward. But we'll just have to see how this unfolds over the next couple months and then make the appropriate decision as that deadline gets closer.
How quickly did you have to kind of swing into action here on the city level and decide whether or not to opt out? And how quickly did you come to that decision?
Pretty quickly once we found out we needed to get it done at this city council meeting to meet the deadlines and stuff. And it really didn't take me long to make that decision, consulting with the city attorney and then our legal team in Indianapolis. It really didn't take long to make that decision. Like I said, that percentage is pretty low, and not knowing how some of the other guidelines exactly would work on some of the other distribution models that they have, it made sense pretty quickly to opt out, take time to really see what else we can learn with the ability to opt back in. And again, like I said, hopefully maybe there can be some discussions and we could get some of that change. So quite honestly, that was a pretty easy decision to opt out. The tougher decision will be whether to opt back in or not.
And it sounds like that would, again, be dependent on, having conversations with lawmakers, making your case for why the percentage should be higher than 15% for local governments. How likely do you think that is to happen?
Well, we're always open to discussion, and I think, anything is possible. It's certainly, I don't think, going to be easy. The legislatures are not in session right now, obviously, and there would have to be a process to handle that, and I'm just not sure. Again, not being involved in the discussions, unfortunately, or any of having any input, I'm not sure what their methodology was or their reasoning was to come up with the percentages that they did. But again, that leaves between the state agencies, that leaves the vast majority, and what's going to the state government, that leaves the vast majority of all of that money in their hands. And again, I've always been an advocate for local control. I think, again, we're the government closest to the people, closest to the problem. We're the ones that people can see every day and know right where my office is at, and work a lot with these different groups that provide those services. And I feel strongly that we can really make the best choices to help, to use that money to help people in our community. And so we need to make that clear and just see where it goes from there. But I don't have a percentage to put on it, but I would say it's probably somewhat of an uphill climb.
Okay. Where do you even kind of tentatively think any future settlement money, however that comes to the city, could be directed?
Well, we would look, very closely at getting money to folks that provide services. Obviously the city did, have some financial impacts with the number of runs that we did, with the overdoses that we did, with some of the stuff that we bought, and with the and with the police department and fire department both. But with that being said, my focus would really be getting money towards treatment right now, getting money towards addiction counselors, addiction programs, mental health programs, and then education to help with prevention of these things happening and people not getting started in the first place. Yep. So we would really, really be focusing on prevention, addiction services and counseling, and mental health services and counseling with the money that we would see, with organizations getting that money to organizations that provide those types of services.
Can you talk a little bit about what the city is currently doing to combat this issue?
Well, the issue is, the number of overdoses is still too high, but the issue has subsided at some level. And that's really a combination of education. It's a combination of, quite frankly, some laws that have changed in the way that opioids can be distributed, how many you can get, how often you can get, record keeping that pharmacies are required to do now, work that doctors are doing and dentists are doing in the way that they prescribe, the way that they track, methodology and you know, medical practices that have changed from, you know, opioids first to things like physical therapy and other types of practices that don't go right to using opioids and finding alternatives to those types of solutions. And I think that's played a large factor in. And then, of course, because of the public light that's been brought to it, the marketing of those products have dramatically either changed or are almost, you know, non-existent when you look on TV and stuff anymore. And so there's been some things like that have done both on the local, state, and national level. A lot of education in our schools and with kids and with people and presentations and things like that. So it's been an effort on a lot of different areas. But a big piece of it was bringing light to what was happening, and then some of the changes that have been made on federal and state law and distribution, like I said, record keeping, prescribing methods, and then just the healthcare professionals, you know, really stepping up, like I said, the doctors and the dentists and the nurse practitioners being careful how those are prescribed and how many, and them not being the first choice for things, and the work that the pharmacy is doing with tracking of that. It's all played a you know, significant role in helping reduce the problem. It is certainly not gone. It is certainly not where we want it yet. And even some of the folks that survived, you know, that period still have some long-term issues that are derived from that still need to be dealt with on the mental health side. So, you know, it's a situation that we're going to have to continue to work through for still many, many years to come.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm Emily Seiberg, and right now we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Also at the City Council meeting this week, the approval of the creation of a fund for American Rescue Plan money for the city, that totals over $16 million. You pointed out this will allow the city to make kind of the first draw of that money. Do you have any more clarity on where the funds will go? I know at the meeting you talked about infrastructure projects, but you also mentioned the money could potentially be directed to other organizations in the community.
Yeah, and that's you know, where we're still at. I mean, it looks like for Lafayette, and again, I want to say it looks like this is not in stone. It doesn't look like we'll be able to do much actual revenue replacement. We had, if we're interpreting, and we believe we are, but we continue to watch for new updates and new bulletins and memos that comes out of, but it appears the interpretation is, even though we lost income and significant income in our parks department, motor vehicle highway, and some of those areas, overall, we didn't lose a significant amount of overall revenue. And as you might remember, we also had put in place the new public safety income tax the previous year, voted in, and mm-hmm. then started collecting that. So that was new revenue that actually came in. And so when you know, look at your balance sheet, you know, we're probably not going to be able to do based on the rules, because it's not based on an individual department. It's based on an aggregate amount for the entire organization. So we had places we were down, places where we were up. We had a new source of revenue mm-hmm. Through the public safety initiative that we had for the entire county. So that's probably going to be off the table for us, at least at any significant level. So, you know, the next big piece, as I talked about, is infrastructure, and particularly water infrastructure. Just to give a little bit more specificity to your listeners, being a little more specific, you know, water is different than sewage and wastewater, and the funds are, we don't have as many funds in that area, and so being able to use that money towards, you know, putting in another water tower, putting in some additional water mains, replacing old water mains. We have a program for doing that, and we're continually trying to get out the oldest water mains in the city. So, you know, water infrastructure will probably be a large priority for some of that money. And then we did talk about, as I indicated then, there does appear to be provisions that would allow us to help other not-for-profit organizations that had losses during the COVID situation. And so we're just at the very initial stages of studying that, looking what that might look like, how much paperwork is involved. As you and your listeners probably recall, the city gave out almost $1 million in additional CDBG funds that we received to help many, many local small businesses and restaurants here in our community. You know, it could be possible if there is a need within an organization to put together and implement a plan similar to that. But we need to see that the paperwork, I mean, is massive, and we do only have so much staff time and that we can put towards things like that and tracking all of that. So, you know, there's still a lot of questions out there, but I feel confident, you know, as we indicated, we'll get the first draw probably this week now that the fund has been created. That'll be just slightly over $8 million, which, you know, it's helpful. But again, in the large scheme of things, you know, we're doing a wastewater project right now, one project that's $12 million. So that money is not going to do a huge number of things when it comes to infrastructure, because infrastructure is quite expensive typically. And, you know, if we look at doing a water tower, some of that, you know, you're probably talking $4.5 million just to do that one project. So, you know, we really need to sit down and prioritize what we're going to get the most bang for our buck with, what's the most useful to the city, you know, whether it's for quality of life or economic development or helping some of those not-for-profits that provide certain services that that may be the most helpful. So we're still looking at that. Like I said, we're not looking to do it fast. We're looking to do it right and make sure that we use that money in the most appropriate way going forward.
Who has been involved so far in the discussions about how the money could be spent? You know, who's sitting at the table for those conversations?
Yeah, so you have myself, Jeremy Deal, our city controller, Cindy Murray, our city clerk, Jeremy Grenard, our city engineer, Dennis Carson from Economic and Community Development, Steve Moore from the Water Department, Brad Talley from the Wastewater Department. We've had Parks and Recs involved. So kind of the senior staff level here at the city, we sit through those meetings and they can take it back to their staff member for additional ideas and input. And so, you know, we're looking at this from a multitude of directions, like I said, to ensure that we're using it wisely and we're using it appropriately. And then as we learn more about how this other piece might work, with you know, other agencies, like we would distribute it outside of our agency, then we'll certainly be talking to individuals involved with some different groups and you know, see who might have the greatest need, if it does fit within the regulations, if they do qualify technically for what, you know, an agency that would be acceptable for us to distribute some of those funds to. So a lot of steps in the process, a lot of, you know, dotting your I's and crossing your T's. So there's no problems with this or no problems during your, you know, the audit that will take place. And so, like I said, we're not trying to go fast. We're trying to get it right and do the most good.
You know, I've talked with other mayors on the program about, you know, shoring up existing infrastructure, both in connection to using this specific funding and then just generally. But why is it important to kind of look down the line and think about future needs for something like water towers and mains? You know, why is that important to fix that now and not wait until there's an issue later?
Right. Well, you know, infrastructure literally plays a role for all of us in our everyday life, whether it's water or wastewater or stormwater. It plays a huge role in economic development, being our letting our local businesses continue to grow and expand if they need to, having the capacity for new businesses to come in that help create additional job and economic prosperity in our community and allow our community to continue to grow. It's incredibly important for water pressure, fire protection, all of those types of things. And, you know, we're pretty aggressive here at the city of Lafayette. If you watch, as I know you do, we are continually doing water, wastewater, stormwater projects. I mean, we're halfway through our wastewater plan. We've spent probably over $100 million already. And also it's important for the environment to ensure that we're not discharging raw sewage into the Wabash River during overflow events. I mean, our wastewater treatment plant is well over a $300 million facility. I mean, water, sewer, wastewater, and stormwater infrastructure are just huge pieces of everything all of us do, from taking a shower to building products to swimming pools to keeping our rivers and streams clean. It plays a huge role in everything that we do. And so, you know, we try to stay ahead of it so we don't have the problems. We have the booster station underway up at Murdoch Park. Several years ago, we bought an additional 13 acres out by the old Aritz Airport right off the Hoosier Heartland for the next well field that we need to go in, and so we can create the loops and pressure that we need. And as growth moves that direction, and then also push back into the city for redundancy for those things I talked about with fire protection. And it also allows us, we have two systems, an upper system and a lower system. And with the reservoir at the park and the new pumping station, and as you create redundancy, even if you have a water main or a water line problem, it allows us to reroute water so people won't be without water for a long period of time, maybe just a little bit or maybe not at all, because we can turn valves and reroute water with the things that we're doing. So it's stuff, quite honestly, people just really don't see and they really don't think about until they turn their faucet on or take a shower or, you know, want to water their flowers or something. The business that they work needs to discharge millions of gallons of, water a day that has different chemicals and substances in it that we need to clean. But it plays a huge, huge role in a community's prosperity.
Okay. Water is important, everyone. Okay. So summer is getting underway. Fresh Air Eats is back. I know there's a new event called First Friday Lafayette. You know, mm-hmm. We're looking ahead to July 4th. So lots to come. And of course, COVID is still a presence in the community. So how does this summer, though, look different from last summer for Lafayette? It obviously different, you know, but some precautions still need to be taken.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's going to look substantially, different. I mean, last summer, everything was basically shut down and canceled. And this year, most of our activities will be back. Some of them will be modified. Some of them will be a little bit smaller. People, that want to still wear masks and stuff, I encourage them to do so if they, want to participate and they're not comfortable. But most of the stuff that we do, art in the park, things like that, will be back. Like I said, things may be spaced a little bit differently. It may not look exactly like it used to, but for the most part, things will be back in a way that I think people can enjoy themselves and be safe. And I think that's important, for the economy. It's important for some of these organizations that rely so heavily on those activities to help raise funds for the year, our not-for-profit group. And so, we're excited about that. We certainly do want to encourage everyone to get out there and please get vaccinated. Our numbers of vaccinations are still not where we would like to see them yet. So, I would just encourage everyone to get out there. If you're still a little hesitant, I understand that. I respect that. But please Look at reputable medical sites, look at the information, and we sure hope people decide to go out and get that vaccine, and we keep driving those numbers up. The higher we get those numbers, the safer that we all are, the better for our hospitals and our healthcare providers and our frontline workers, and the better it is for everything in the economy. So, you know, we've come a long way, but let's get out there and get those shots, get those vaccines, and talk to your friends and neighbors and family members if they still have questions, and let's try to keep driving those numbers upward.
We do have some listener questions today. We just have a few minutes left. We'll try to get to a couple of these. We'll start with a quick one from listener Kathy, who says she remembers in the original plans for parking near Loeb Stadium that there would be landscaping involved. Is that still happening?
Parking? Okay, well, I'm just trying to think. If she's thinking about the Osco parking lot...
I believe that is what she is thinking about, yes.
Yes, ma'am, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. The Osco parking lot that we purchased, yes. We weren't able to get that all done in time for the opening season this year. Mm-hmm. So as they probably saw, we put a skim coat of asphalt on top of it, and then we just painted the lines. We brought in some... We were renting some portable light racks that you see out when they're working on the highways at night to light up the parking lot.
Okay.
For now. So in August, as soon as the last game is played at Loeb with the Aviators and stuff, then yes, we will then rebuild that whole parking lot where we'll actually put in the islands with the trees, we'll put in all the drainage, we'll put in all the curbing, and we'll put in all the new entrance and exit ramps. And yes, it will have the trees, the landscaping, the flowers, and we'll have everything in time for next year's season. We just couldn't get it all done, and so that project will actually start in August.
Okay. And the stadium, as you said, the games are happening. Baseball season is in full swing. How has that all been going over in that part of town?
Really, really good. People are really enjoying the stadium, getting lots of positive comments. We had over 2,300 people for opening night of the Aviators. We had 1,800 people for the McCutcheon-Harrison sectional championship game. So we've also had Ivy Tech there that's done their graduation. Leadership Lafayette's using it. United Way is using it. So a lot of different uses and a lot of inquiries, and that's really what we want. So we'd encourage everybody to get out, see the stadium, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Follow us, the Aviators, and the Parks Department to keep updated. Got all kinds of things coming with the opening of the lagoon and bringing back the paddle boats and art in the park, and just follow us on social media because there's just going to be a ton of activities for everybody this year.
That's our time for today. Mayor Wisworski, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Emily.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions for all four mayors to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.